Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is Josh Williams, one of the top engineers in Dubai. But first of all, did you know that 32 digital music services closed in the last 5 years? 53% of them wound down just because there was flagging interest, 22% were acquired, and 13% went bankrupt. Now, what that signifies is there's probably more consolidation in the music streaming business to come. Spotify and Pandora are both at risk. Both have been losing money and are burning through money. Spotify is set for an IPO, in other words, they're going public, mostly because right now they have a lot of investors that have a lot of money put into it, and they have some big loans that are coming due. So they have to do this in order to pay everybody back. But that doesn't mean that they won't be acquired somewhere down the line. It might be easier to do it once they're public than it is now. So Spotify, although they're the big dog on the block right now, just may be absorbed into one of the bigger dogs. Pandora, in fact, has been losing money, and they've been trying a number of different things in order to get back in the ballgame. One is to actually change the service from a radio-like service to an on-demand service, which is going to happen very soon. However, they're pretty late to the game for doing that, so that might not mean much. And all of the prospective suitors have pretty much backed away. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if Pandora actually disappeared by the end of the year. Now, what does that leave us? It leaves us with Apple Music. It leaves us with Amazon Music Unlimited, which just launched about 6 months ago, but is going to be really big. It leaves us with Google Play Music, and out of China, Tencent. Tencent is the one that's going to be the big contender that no one over here really thinks about. In China, they already have 200 million users, and 22 million of them are subscribers, and they're just getting started. And the thing about it is, they're going to make it very tough for Apple and Amazon and Google to actually make a play in Asia, because they're going to block all that, and they're going to keep it for themselves. So what does that mean? Well, there's a lot of things that are takeaways here. The first thing is, everybody complained about losing money when downloads started to give way to streaming. But the fact of the matter is, for every dollar lost, there's about $2.18 that's coming from streaming. So in fact, that's paying off, and it's paying off big. The other thing that's interesting is there's very little cross-usage. So if you subscribe to Apple Music, there's very little chance that you'll also subscribe to Spotify and vice versa. That's actually keeping everything from exploding, and mostly because people are already spending a lot of money per year on music, and they don't want to spend any more. And after all, if you got 20, 30, 40, 50 million songs that you can get access to on one particular service, what makes another one that much more attractive? Because it's basically the same 30, 40, 50, 60 million songs that you have access to. The only thing that's different is the UI. Right now, the prices are the same. So it's going to make for a very interesting few years here. Now, there's a couple other things that are interesting. One of the things that bands are finding, artists are finding, is that they're actually attracting more fans on the smaller services like Deezer than they are on the big ones like Apple Music and Spotify. The reason why is the discovery is actually better on those smaller services. So where you might get, let's just say, 400 new fans from a Deezer, might only translate into 40 on Spotify. So there's a lot more emphasis by artists going to the smaller services. How long will that keep up? I don't know. Now, one of the things that's actually turning that around is the fact that Spotify now has all sorts of new data that they can give to you, right down to city level. And both record labels and management really love that, because before you go into a city, you can find out just how many people are listening to your streams, thanks to Spotify. So it's going to be a very interesting year. Look for a lot more consolidation. Look for the landscape to change in streaming, but also look for it to grow. If you have any comments or questions, please send them to questions@BobbyOwnerCircle.com. The fourth editions of both my Mixing Engineer's Handbook and the Recording Engineer's Handbook are now available on Amazon and soon coming to a bookstore near you. You can read excerpts and find out more details by going to bobbyosinski.com. Also in the news last week, the world's first perfect concert hall. It's in Hamburg. It's called the Elbphilharmonie, and it was designed completely by algorithm. And it's not only the 10,000 unique acoustic panels, but it's everything else as well that was done by algorithm, including the custom-made chairs, including the carpeting and flooring, and just about everything in this concert hall was done by algorithm. Now, the interesting thing about these 10,000 unique acoustic panels is the fact that no two are alike or acoustically behave alike. They're made out of this gypsum fiber, and they all go together in such a way that they form sort of like eggshell-shaped cavities. So what ends up happening is the diffusion and the absorption is very, very different across all of them. Now, why is this important? Well, in order for this to be acclaimed as perfect, you might think, well, what does that mean? What is perfect acoustics? Well, in the minds of acousticians, what it means is you have the same reverb response everywhere in the room, no matter where you go. And that's always been the tough part, where you can get it really good at certain places and you go other places and usually it's a lot deader than you would like. So now with this new way of doing things, in fact, we get this perfect concert hall, or at least that's what everyone is acclaiming. It's not that big. It's 2,150 seats, where if you look at the most acclaimed concert halls in the world, that's pretty much the seating level. Somewhere between 1,800 and 2,500 people is just about the sweet spot for that. So that's the Elbphilharmonie in Hamburg, the world's first perfect concert hall. Josh Williams used to be one of my best assistants when I was based out of Front Page Recorders in Glendale, California. Josh was really good at what he did. I just knew it was a matter of time before he went and made a name for himself. About 10 years ago, he moved to Dubai, and he quickly became one of the top engineers and producers in that part of the world. I spoke with him via Skype from his studio in Dubai. I know the story, but for those that are listening, how did you get to Dubai?
Well, I was working in Los Angeles for Front Page Recorders with Biff Vincent, and things in LA were kind of shifting around in the music scene. I came to visit my family, which my dad was working in Dubai. And then as soon as I got here, pretty much I was offered a job, and I've stayed, and I've now been here for almost 10 years.
Wow. So when you first got there, how were you accepted? Because coming in from the outside, was that a good thing or a bad thing? Did they look at you kind of as somebody that was cool because you're from LA, or did they have some sort of trepidation? How did that work?
I think it went both ways. There were some people that thought, oh, great, a guy from LA, you know, with some experience working with some high-end clients. That's great. That's what Dubai needs. And then there were other people that I was called a liar a lot, you know, and didn't believe anything that I had to say. And really, a lot of people were trying to sabotage me at first. That actually still goes on. So, but I think most people are accepting of it.
Gee, after 10 years, you should have some pretty good cred there. So I would think that would kind of stop.
Well, it does, but it's the same people that were doing it 10 years ago. Dubai is, it's a big city, but it's split by demographics. And so the Western people that live in Dubai is still small. And so you have that small kind of community that is great, but also you have that same kind of problem where people know everyone and say everything and talk, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
Still an immature city when it comes to the music business here.
Well, let's go there. What's the music scene like? Let's start with the bigger picture first. What's the music scene like in the Middle East as compared to London or LA?
Well, it's a lot smaller. There isn't so much of a formula that there is, I would say. So there's a lot more experimentation. Whereas in Los Angeles and pretty much in just basic pop music, it follows a system. Whereas in Dubai, you don't have that at all. So everyone's experimenting on different sounds and different instrumentation, which I think is great. The scene is small, but building. So you have a Lebanese band called Mushri Leila, who's getting in the news all over the place because of some political reasons. Their lifestyle is not necessarily one that a lot of Middle Eastern countries like. So they've made it in the news, and their music is great, and they're getting playing all over the world right now. You have other Dubai artists that, for a long time, their original music was not necessarily something that people wanted to hear. They wanted to hear cover bands or DJs. And now, for the first time in probably the last 3 years, these original artists are coming up, and they're playing in front of 30,000 people shows. And it's starting to get to where there actually is a scene here for the first time.
Wow. That's very cool. Are there a lot of studios there?
No. There's a few. There's my studio, which is Record Pro Records. And it's the studio's called In The Mix. And then there's Soundstruck and a couple other small ones. It's kind of fun, though, because a lot of my interns are now starting to open up studios, my old interns. So that's good. It means that the business is growing and everything. And it's fun to watch them do what they're doing and release music.
The music that you're doing, is it more modern, or is it traditional, or a combination?
Well, I came from more of a rock background with recording live instruments and everything. And then being in Dubai, people like more of the European electronic music when I first got here. So I had to quickly kind of learn how to do that. And then a lot of Arabic influences, a lot of Indian influences. So I was just recently, I was making a video of the last 10 years of music that I've worked on. And it's crazy to see, you know, rock bands followed by Sikh, Sikh religious music. Traditional Sikh like chants, and then stuff from India, followed by electronic music and all this stuff. So the music here is every product that I get is completely different.
Are you recording traditional instruments then, Arabic instruments and Indian instruments? And what was that like to learn how to do that?
It's a lot of fun. So like in my studio, I have a whole bunch of crazy little instruments that I never thought I would. That I never thought I would actually even know what they would be called. So I use a lot of harmoniums and Shruti boxes. Shruti boxes are kind of like a harmonium, but you get kind of a chord and you play it. The oud, which is, it's like the old guitar, Arabic kind of acoustic guitar with a really round body. And that one took a little bit of time to figure out where it sounds good on the mic. And every single oud sounds different, so you have to place mics differently around the room. So, and it's everything, even tabla, a lot of tabla stuff, darbuka, a lot of different percussion stuff. So it's just really, everything is experimenting here.
What's it like recording vocals that you don't understand?
I thought that would be a lot harder than it was. When I was in LA, I worked on a Japanese project, and then I worked on some Spanish-speaking projects, which I didn't understand the language. So I had a little bit of experience, but now I pretty much work in different languages every other project. And you can still understand emotion. The beauty of music is you can understand emotion, you know, and that's whatever language it is. Every once in a while I have to ask, what is the song about, to kind of understand if we need to go sad or if we need to be happy. But once you know what the song is about, you pretty much do it.
What's big there now, musically?
Musically, there's... since day one, since I got here, it's been DJs mostly. So they really like the glamorous club music. So they'll sell bottles of champagne for thousands of dollars and everything, and that's how a lot of people make their money. So they have the DJs with the flashing lights and everything, and a lot of the tourists, they come here for that. A lot of the people that are now living here, they are kind of sick of that. So what's really kind of up and coming is actually singer-songwriters right now. Reason being is most of the kids that went to high school here were in bands, like rock bands and stuff, but the members of the bands had to travel to go to university outside of the country. So they always left like one or two people back. And so all these bands were like separated. So then open mics started coming up, and they would just come with the acoustic and they could do it solo. And that's starting to get really, really popular here.
They're playing acoustic guitar?
Yeah, that's the big thing. Like there's one band that started off as two separate bands, met at an open mic, and then all of a sudden, within a year, they're opening up for Lionel Richie in front of 20,000 people, and they formed by just doing that singer-songwriting thing.
Wow.
So it's really kind of on the ground level, basic kind of stuff. But that's, to me, that's what's kind of fun about this music industry here.
Do people still buy CDs there, or is it now all streaming?
Yeah, no one buys any CDs.
Yeah.
So vinyl's coming up here as well. There's some vinyl stores opening up, and when the artists here that are releasing stuff, they're usually releasing it just online. Sometimes vinyl, or at most, it's a USB stick that they sell, but no CDs.
Believe it or not, cassettes are coming back here.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that. I actually have an old car that has a cassette player, so whenever anyone gets in my car, they're like, whoa, that's amazing.
Oh, it's funny because there are record labels that are just dedicated to cassette releases, and this has been going on for like 5 years, but last year was one of the biggest years in like 10 years for the duplicators. It was, you know, like
right.
They're selling them like crazy, and apparently the kids really dig them because they're easy to take around and they're easy to duplicate and sell. You can sell them for cheap. So it's turning into a scene.
It's making your own mixtape. It's that same sort of thing where you can give it to your friends and everything. I remember one of my first mixtapes, and I made it for a girl, and this shows how cool I was. I put John Denver on there.
Yeah.
So I never ended up dating that girl.
I wonder why. So you've worked with the royal family a lot. What's that like in terms of, do you have to watch what you do and say? Are they cool? How does that work?
One of the guys that I work with a lot is part of the royal family. He's part of the Sharjah royal family, so not the Dubai royal family. And you would never know that he's royalty. In fact, I worked with him for probably 3 or 4 months before I found out. And I found out by walking through one of the malls with him, and he got stopped, and they started talking about who he was. And that was the first time that I knew. He's just a normal person, a good guy. So a lot of what you hear on TV and on the news is what I've witnessed is not the same as what I see on American news.
Yeah.
When it comes to this region.
Well, I would imagine they'd get it wrong. They get a lot wrong. So.
It seems like there's a big agenda, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In terms of being in the studio, I know there must be some cultural differences. Does that carry over to the studio?
You know what? I haven't noticed that too much. I think in the studio, everyone's there to create and to collaborate. And so the difference of culture is, it's something that is, it's an influence from each other, but it's not something that hinders everyone. It's a lot like, I don't know. I was watching the documentary on Muscle Shoals where it was talking about how people, just different cultures, got together, and it was the one place where that never mattered. And I think Dubai is like that. I've never noticed any animosity towards any culture or anything like that. And everyone just comes and creates.
Now, when you say create, what are the sessions like? Or are they like in the States where, you know, they can go on forever? Do people feel like they're limited in the studio in terms of attention or as time they want to spend, or is it just the same?
One of the different things that I've done in Dubai than how I used to do it when I was back in the States was I had to start charging per song instead of per hour, because people had no idea how many hours it actually took. So the first project that I worked on, they had enough money. They didn't tell me this, but they had enough money for 4 hours of recording, total recording. And after the third hour, and I had to teach them how to tune their guitars and everything. And after the third hour of just kind of getting basic sounds kind of up, a radio DJ walked in and said, oh, we're going to play the music on the radio in the next hour. So that was my first experience. And
wow.
Yeah, so and then that was within like a couple weeks of me starting here. And then they announced my name on the radio and played that. And so I had to change up the hourly thing to a song, a bulk project, and kind of estimate how many hours it's going to take and kind of explain to them this is how long it takes. Then once that gets started, the sessions can either be, you know, 12, 14 hour, 15 hour days, depending on the deadline, or it can be more relaxed. I would say on average, I'm working 9 to 10 hour days. With the artists, they would probably be in 5 to 6 hours out of those days. And then the rest is me.
When you're mixing, is your approach to mixing any different on the music that you're doing?
Yes. Yes. Very different depending on the genre of music. So like in Western music, you have the kick and the snare pretty loud most of the time. And with a lot of the other types of music, that's kind of in the background and you have more of the percussion up louder. And the drums kind of, they're more for the backbone of it, but not really as a dominant part of the song. I like, when with Western music, I like a lot of attack and the transients on the drums to pop through, whereas on a lot of the music here, you don't really want that as much.
Wow, that is a different approach, that's for sure. How about for effects? Do the people like it dry, or do they like effects, they like a lot of reverb?
I think with Arabic music, it's a lot of reverb. It depends on the client, really, and it depends on what they like. One of the things I have to do when I don't know the style of music so much is I have to really do a lot of research and just listen to music. And every project, I think, when it comes to that is different. And so you have to have a different approach on it.
How about the mixes? How long do they take? Do you have a lot of tracks? I mean, here now, the tracks have gotten out of hand where, you know, if you don't have 100 tracks, it's like you're not even trying. So you know, what's it like there?
Again, every project is different. So if I'm working on a rock band, it will be kind of 100 tracks easily. I worked on, just recently, we're about to release an album by this artist, Nushlek Sploosh, and it's very experimental music, and we had, 300, 400 tracks, full string arrangements, massive, massive sessions. So that was a huge one. And then at the same time, in between that, I was working on an electronic guy where we were going for minimal sounds, and that had about 12 tracks. The one thing about Dubai is there is no formula. There is no kind of set rule. So everything that you get in is going to be completely different than the last one.
That's cool.
It's great. Yeah, I'm a little bit, I get a little bit bored of things. So to me, it's great.
What's the musicianship like?
Dubai is full of hotels, and every single one of those hotels has at least one band in those hotels. Those hotels pay more money for the artists than anywhere else in the world, pretty much.
Wow.
So for a while, the musicianship was bad. Now, some of the best musicians are coming here because they realize they'll make more money and they can make a living. And the hotels pay not only for their salaries, but also food and living expenses.
Whoa.
So now we have some great musicians here. I have the group of musicians that I use on the recording, we call it the Ghost Crew, based off of the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
From LA. So, and we really kind of try to, because it's such an immature kind of city in a way, we really try to get influence from like Los Angeles, the Seattle music scene, the London music scene. We really try to take from that and try to, we're building it from the ground up. And so these musicians are kind of a part of that.
Are the musicians there influenced by American music, or is it mostly European?
Well, just again, the Ghost Crew, there's two Australians in it. There's one Canadian. There are two Scottish people in it. So they all kind of have their different backgrounds. I would say the Australians and the Americans have very similar taste. And the Scottish people, they have the same sort of rock taste, but it's a little more influenced on the European side as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, but the artists, though, where are the artists coming from? Do they lean more European or Western?
European, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. When it comes to a Western artist that comes in here, they want more of a European kind of sound, more so than the LA sound. So that took me a while to learn how to do, because it was so much different than what I was brought up on.
How did you learn?
Just by doing, by failing and then keep on pushing through and figuring it out.
Well, what was different? What did you change?
Well, a lot more programming for one, a lot more layers in a way. And it just different delays and different reverbs, really, to overlap things. I would say mostly, though, the programming side of things. I was really weak on that when I came here, and I really had to improve on that sort of thing.
So how long did it take before you were working, like, all the time? Did it happen right away for you, or did you have to build up your clientele?
I was working pretty solid right when I got here. When I first got to Dubai, I started working for a company that also had kind of a record label, and they had one hip-hop artist that was signed to them and one rock band that was signed to them. And so when I started working with them, I kind of was put in charge of the rock band, getting that, and and doing the engineering and mixing of the hip hop guy. And so that was straight away. And then from there, it's been, you know, I've been here 10 years and I was just doing my 10 year kind of video thing. And I've averaged for the last 10 years, I've averaged about 5 to 6 songs a month doing. And that's, I think that's good.
Yeah.
That when I put it all together, I was kind of shocked by that.
Well, it's a lot if you're tracking and starting from the beginning to end. That's
most of that is without any help.
Wow.
Most of that is just me doing the engineering, producing, mixing, mastering, doing it all.
Wow. Yeah. Do they believe in mastering there?
They are losing faith in mastering.
Do you use any of the online mastering at all?
I haven't. I know some people that have. The other producers here and mixers and everything, they usually send it out for the mastering. There's been a lot of talks on what is it that they provide that is something that other people, that they can't provide themselves. And I think technology is kind of getting in a way to where mastering is you can do it, a lot of it you can do yourself. I still like sending it out. I still like someone having a different set of ears to do it. But I think a lot of the clients are starting to go like, no, I don't want to spend that money.
Speaking of which, what are the budgets like there? And I know you've dealt with some of the royal family. Does that mean there's a real big budget there with them as compared to some other clients that you have?
No, I would say the budgets are smaller here, but there's more people that are able to pay for themselves instead of rely on investors or labels to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So the overall budget, I think, is smaller, but there are times, and I'd have to calculate it into dollars, but I did the 40th anniversary song for the country, which was cool.
Yeah.
And for that, the budget was something like, for that, the budget was about $15,000 total.
Yeah.
But we had about 30 artists on it as well. And that would be the highest paid thing that I've gotten. Mostly a song is about just over $1,000 per song.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that makes sense. Do the artists come in with a demo? Does everybody have home studios like here?
Yes, yeah. Most of the time they come in with a pretty terrible demo, you know. But every once in a while they'll come in with a demo and I'll listen to it and be like, you don't need me, you know, this is good. But yeah, everyone on their laptop has a studio. So.
Yeah, that's everywhere. It seems like that. But as you know, it's not if you own the hammer, it's knowing how to swing it. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's what I keep on trying to tell people in Dubai. One of the big things is people buy really nice equipment, but don't know how to use it. And so then they get their clientele and they go into this amazing studio, which eventually will close down because they get a guy that just graduated school a month ago with the best equipment and they expect it to be world class.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you, the equipment there. What's it like normally in various studios as compared to what you had before in Los Angeles?
Well, everything now is inside the box.
Yeah.
So inside, you know, I in Los Angeles and working with Biff in his studio, he had all the outboard gear. He had the SSL, he had the Euphonics System 5, and that's what I came from moving into Dubai. And Dubai, I had, I think the first thing that I had was a Pro Control 24, and I had to learn how to make things sound like an SSL, which was a lot harder than it sounds.
Yeah.
An SSL, you could kind of pull up the faders and it sounded good. And when I was a lot younger and working on that, I took for granted having that board and being able to do that. And then not having that board and working on like inside the box, you have to completely change everything that you do. And I would say all the studios here are kind of more inside the box. There's one studio called Soundstruck that is more based on the LA kind of thing. They have the SSL, they have the outboard gear, but I would say they're one of the only ones that are like that.
Well, how about mics and preamps and stuff like that? Is that kind of equivalent? Is there high-end stuff or is it?
There's high-end, but it's all, we buy it all from the States.
Uh-huh.
So I would say the average studio, they all have their... They don't have the Telefunken 251 kind of stuff, but they'll have the U87s and that kind of stuff. So,
do you see a lot of clone mics over there? Because Here, we're overrun with them. God, there must be several dozen clone U-87s and 251s and U-47s, yeah. And some of them sound great and big bargain, and some of them aren't.
That hasn't reached Dubai yet. I'm kind of hoping for that, though, because it seems like something fun to do, to listen to that. We are starting to buy the build your own mic kind of stuff, and doing that. That's a lot of fun to do.
Yeah.
So, but as far as something in Dubai that hasn't reached here yet.
I don't know if you're aware of it, but there's a company online that's called Microphone Parts, microphone-parts.com.
Right.
Yeah. You're hip to them.
Yeah. So I had one of my old assistants, he was the one that was introducing me to that. Maybe he got that from you because he religiously watches your web pages and everything. Oh. So
it was interesting. I recently started to see kits for mic preamps and compressors and everything come back. So I did some research and I found like a dozen companies that have, yeah. You know, if you want to buy an 1176 clone, they're all over the place that you can buy in a kit. And same with API and Neve style mic pre's and stuff that are really cheap and, you know, are fairly good. So that's a good thing because that wasn't available for a while.
It's funny because I actually have an 1176 kit on its way to Dubai right now. So
there you go.
I'll let you know how that comes out.
Are you hip to Warm Audio?
Not so much.
Okay. Warm Audio is great because they make very inexpensive. Of course, by the time it gets to you, it might not be, but very inexpensive clones. So much so I bought, a bunch of their preamps. They're API style preamps and 1176s. And I bought three of those. You know, they're only like $500 or something, you know, and they sound
great.
They get you like 95% of the way there. And
that's great.
A new U87 clone they just came out with. I saw it NAMM for $500 that sounded pretty good on the floor, although you can't really tell, but good stuff.
I'll definitely check that out. That's where my studio in Dubai is lacking, is stuff like that. I need to get more of that.
Is it difficult to get gear? Do you have like a gear dealer there?
We have some gear dealers, I would say, for the most part, I actually go to the U.S. and bring it from there,
mm-hmm.
More than using the dealers here. The dealers here are good, but depending on what you want, they don't always know what you're talking about. It depends. Most of the time, if I want something on the high-end kind of stuff, I'll go to the U.S. and do it and get it.
Is there like a value-added tax or anything to bring in the country?
No, not really. It depends on how much you get. But if you just have a couple of things, then no, they're not restrictive on that. And they don't really try to tax everything.
Okay. So as you look around what's happening in your particular area there, what would you like to see different or improved?
One of the things that is difficult in Dubai is it's not so much in the music scene, but it's outside in the community. You have some people that really think, music is a voice, and sometimes people don't want that voice to be heard. And so in order for any artist to perform on any stage, they have to get permissions from the government, which it costs a lot of money and takes a lot of time to get. So it's really hard for artists, especially the younger ones, to get on stage, which I think limits what they're doing here. I think also when it comes to the Middle East, they're so used to not paying for music when they play stuff. They don't have any performance rights organizations here or anything like that. And so when it comes to recorded music, it's really hard to find ways for that to be, for one, respected, and for people to, most people just steal it. And that includes TV stations and everything.
Wow.
Where they just, they'll take music, and that's something that needs to change. I had one conversation with one of the top TV producers who said that if a song is more than 30 days old, you're allowed to take it.
Wow.
Trying to convince them, no, it doesn't work that way. But here it does. I mean, they are fixing that, but that's something that needs to change. So I think having music, having people, you know, being able to listen to music is a big thing. And that's something that they restrict in a certain way here.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's a drag. It must be difficult to make a living if you're an artist there.
Yes and no. So like I said earlier, all the hotels have bands, and they are, they do pay more. So, and it is starting to be if you're an original band, you're getting they're getting these residencies. So they'll go to a hotel and they're playing the hotel six nights a week. They're making enough to make a living off of it. It's not something to where they'll ever become, you know, rock stars and you know, millionaires by doing it, but they can at least have a living and a decent life by doing it.
Hey, I think everywhere for a musician, making a living is the new success.
So I think so too.
Yeah. That's really the case. Well, what would happen then if a band goes to one of the hotels? Do they have to get the permission from the government, or does the hotel get it?
The hotel will get the permissions from the government. So they'll get the passports and everything and just get the permissions. The government doesn't, for the most part, they're not going to go and try to listen to every word and every lyric of everything. But it's just so that they have documentation on who's playing where. So in case there's an incident, they can know exactly who it was that was there. But yeah, it's the hotels that will pay for that. And it can get expensive. So they usually just get one band so that they can pay, which to me kind of gets boring in a way. You don't want to listen to the same band over and over again. But that's a lot of the ways that they can keep their business going.
So if you're going to go out on a Friday night and you're going to go to hear some bands and all the different hotels have one, how many would that be?
There's literally, I don't know how many hotels are in Dubai, but I would imagine it's in the thousands.
Are you kidding? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of music if you want to go in. That also includes DJs as well. So
yeah.
So it depends. If you want to see a rock band, then you have too many to choose from. The problem is most of them are cover bands.
Yeah.
So if you like cover music, then that's that. I'm not a personal. I like original music more than I like cover bands.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So the original scene is a lot smaller. You narrow it down, and there's usually two or three places that you can see original music.
Wow. Pretty amazing. I have to get out there one of these days.
You do. It's Dubai's an amazing city. Like it's really incredible. And a lot of it is just coming from the ground up. So that's fun.
I was actually considering taking a cruise that leaves out of there and goes, I think it goes to Singapore or vice versa. That would be a lot of fun. Won't be this year, but maybe next year if you're still there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you definitely come.
Okay.
It'd be great to see you. And all the people, everyone that I know in the music industry, they read all your stuff. They're big fans of you. So they would love for you to come out here.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Definitely. Last question for you. What's the best piece of business advice that maybe somebody gave to you along the way, or maybe you learned by yourself?
Well, a couple of things, actually. Stephen Stewart Short, back in when I was working in LA and I was assisting for him, he told me, don't spend all your time on one project and spend years on that, because you might get that one project sounding really great, but you've missed out on 10 to 20 other projects that you could have done and you would have got a lot better. And I really do believe in that, to where get as much work as you can done. I remember you always used to say when I was assisting you, is it soup yet? Whenever there was, you know, a connection problem or anything like that. And what that was is just keep on working, make sure that it gets there and do it well, but do it efficiently and everything. And that was always, that's something that I try to do in business.
I forgot that phrase. I'm glad you reminded me. I want to start to use it again.
I will never forget that phrase.
To find out more about Josh, you can go to joshuafwilliams.com. That's Joshua F, as in Frank, Williams.com, all one word. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com. We love getting your questions and we love getting your comments. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to bobbyoinnercircle.com, or find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Mixcloud, and Google Play. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyoinnercircle.com, you'll also find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.